podde tillbaks igen. Linus på baslinjen. Ja, han är tillbaka igen. Linus på baslinjen.
This episode is sponsored by House of Bontin, the destination for smart training tools for tennis and paddle. If you use the code Linus, you get 15% discount on everything except slinger bag and already lowered prices. So head over to houseofbontin.se and look for your training tools that can help you improve your game in tennis or paddle. We have a new episode of Linus på baslinjen podcast for you, and this time together with Jarkko Nieminen, former number 13 in the world in singles and now the captain of the Finnish Davis Cup team. Jarkko had a fantastic career, winning 2 ATP titles, reaching 3 quarterfinals of Grand Slam, and becoming the number 13 in the world in singles and 42 in doubles. Today he's working for the Finnish Tennis Federation, and as I said, he is the captain for the Davis Cup team and are also commentating tennis on television. In this great episode, we talk about the biggest reasons to Jarkko's success as a tennis player, his pathway as a junior to becoming the US Open champion as last year junior, and why he thinks his late specialization helped him in the start of his pro career. We also talk about why doubles help your singles game, why Jarkko think he lost 11 out of 13 singles finals on the ATP Tour. We talk about his tactics against Roger Federer and about his view of Finnish tennis today. And of course, I also ask him about his match against Bernard Tomic 2014 that lasted record short time of 28 minutes and 20 seconds. Everybody, please welcome Jarkko Nieminen. Now I have the big pleasure to welcome Jarkko Nieminen to the podcast. How are you, Jarkko?
Thanks a lot. I'm all good. Life is good.
Perfect. Jarkko, I will start right away here. You reached the place 13 in singles on the ATP ranking and 42 in doubles. What do you think were the biggest reasons and key to why you made the top of the world in such a big sport as tennis?
Well, I think I have always been really good to getting a lot out from myself in practices and matches since I was a little kid. Whatever sports I did, I think I always got quite a lot out from myself. Every day, of course, some days are better than others, but I think I always had the attitude to give my best and fight hard and work hard and since a little kid or teenager, I had always also like a strong will to try to be better every day. I think that's one of the key things. I never had like a certain ranking goals. I always just wanted to improve my forehand and backhand and so on. So always main focus was in the game.
Was that the same even when you reached the senior level, that it was the ranking was second hand, that you always wanted to improve in first hand?
Well, of course, when you get to top 100, then the next goal, you want to be top 50, then you want to be seeded in the Grand Slams, top 32, and then so on. But those were like a small detail goals for me. I think I think I was able to focus for improving my game most of the time, and then of course if the game improves, then the ranking and the wins goes hand in hand with the game improving the game.
And you talked about that you always gave your best in practices and so on, some kind of inner motivation.
where do you think that came from? Was it something you were born with, or was it the environment that made you jump like that?
I don't know. I think maybe it comes from parents as well, but I think the main thing is the passion for all sports with something which was something to do with the ball. I tried everything: soccer, ice hockey, basketball, and so on. So I always, it doesn't matter if it was a game with the friends in the backyard or practice match or something. I always wanted to win. Always wanted to, throw myself in and give 100%, because that was fun. That's what I enjoy. I don't enjoy going there and giving like 50%. I think doesn't make any sense. I love sports. I love playing with soccer ball, tennis ball, and I think the passion, huge passion for the game is the key. And when you asked about the ranking, I think if I look at my career, I was like pretty good, like winning those matches that I kind of on the paper supposed to win, those who were behind me in the rankings. And of course my limits were there, like trying to get to top 10. Some of the top players were just too good, just too good for my limits, but for my maximum game. But I was pretty good winning a lot of matches, even though I didn't win like so many big tournaments or anything like that.
You're obviously from Finland, and I guess tennis wasn't the biggest sport when you grew up. How did it come that you chose tennis when you tried so many different sports? And I guess you maybe were good in a couple of them.
There was tennis in the family. My parents were playing tennis. They were also coaching a little bit, so there was tennis rackets and tennis balls in the house. And obviously, when they played like in weekly basis, then I also like were in the tennis halls with them, and slowly started to hit try and hit tennis balls when I was really young. But I didn't specialize to tennis when I was young. It came pretty late. As I mentioned earlier, I tried a lot of different sports, and I think in the end, when I ended up being a professional tennis player, I think that background gave me a very strong base to be a professional athlete, because I played a lot of like 10 different sports. And even though I liked tennis the most since the beginning, I had a lot of other sports until quite old stages or later stages of teenager.
When did you specialize? How old were you?
Well, as I say, tennis was always number one, so I wanted to play more and more tennis every year, but it wasn't like I didn't aim to be a tennis player or anything like that. I love tennis, so then I wanted to be better in tennis. I competed more and more every year, so in that sense, I mean, tennis was always number one and main sport for me, but it's basically only after like high school when I started to think like maybe this is something that I could be like a pro at, or and then around 15, then I went to sports high school, and then during those years I won boys to US Open, and that was kind of the last last like push for and boost for me that okay, if I'm able to win like the best players in my age group in the world, maybe I can try to make a career in this. But still, I wanted to try 1 year, like full time, and then see how it goes. And then during that year, I went to top 100 and so on. Final Stockholm.
So then it was about time to go for tennis. Yes. I see. Do you think would that be possible today for juniors as well to specialize that late, or decide to go for the sport?
I don't know. I think it's tough to recommend my path to someone. Maybe it doesn't work at all. Some parts I can really recommend, for example, doing a lot of things, trying different things and a lot of different sports when I was a little kid. But when I look back, I did a lot of things that helped me to be a good tennis player and have a long professional career, but it's coincidence that I happened to do those things, because I didn't think that I'm going to be a professional tennis player for whatever 15, like less than 20 years. So, but yeah. Everything what I did as a kid helped me later when I ended up being a pro player. So I don't know. So I think since I made the decision so late, I still had I had practiced so. My first touch to tennis was very early. I think that's what everybody has to do if they want to have chance in a sport. Like, you don't have to specialize that early, but the first touch to that sport or experience has to be quite early. And that's what I did. I was 4 or 5 when I first time played tennis. But then the final decision to be pro, happened much later than, for example, youngsters nowadays. But obviously, many maybe specialize too early nowadays as well. But there's a lot of, in that big puzzle, there's a lot of parts that I would recommend. But of course, it works for someone and for someone not. And I also, for me, I wanted to go to school as well and do that well, and made quite a normal Finnish kid path, except I was competing every weekend, and I obviously traveled a lot.
So it's not so
normal. As a junior, in that sense, it wasn't normal, but otherwise, it's a lot of coincidence as well.
Yeah, as you said, you won the US Open for juniors. I think it was 1999. Like now, when we know what you did later on, what do you think that victory meant for your career? Was it important to have that success as a junior? Now, you told me that made you get the last push to aim to go pro, but. But do you think it's important to be on that level for juniors if you have a dream?
For sure. I think you have to be in that, you need to be, maybe you don't have to win or be the best exactly, but you have to have certain parts in the puzzle fixed or on a certain level. You have to be on that train among the best juniors. Like, it's of course there's some individuals who come out from outside the top junior tournament, but it's not too many. I mean, you need to have a certain level of game when you are that age, and of course I was already 18 when I won US Open, so you quite I mean you know, also like many other colleagues in that junior tournament were already they had already started a pro career. And I as I said, there's a lot of coincidence also in my youth, thinking about ending up being a pro player. But I think that helped, that I made the decision that late. I think that's one of the reasons I had so much energy when I started. I never struggled with almost anything, traveling part or always loved to work a lot and hard. And I had I felt that when I started after high school, I started the pro career. I think that's just a start for me, even though I had played tennis all my life. But then comparing maybe some others who started pro career 5 years earlier, or main focus was, or they specialized very early, maybe they already had maybe some of them got a little bit, they didn't have the same energy, I don't know. But of course, as I said, many things what I did as a kid, those were kind of practices for the pro career. But obviously I at that time I didn't know that I didn't do those thousands of hours playing soccer with ice hockey with friends because of tennis.
Many players I think believe it's a quite tough part of your career between the juniors and seniors. How did your sort of setup look like when you were going from junior to senior? Were you still in Finland having your base, or did you?
Yes, I always had. I always had a base in Finland, but I always had like very strong relationship to Sweden and Swedish tennis culture. I have said many times that I feel that I have I have a lot of Swedish tennis culture in me, or I had in my career. I competed first time in Sweden in boys under 10. And since that, I competed there and practiced there every year quite a lot until the end of my career. And then when I started pro career, there was at that time, there was still a lot of Swedes, like those strong age groups who were on the top. So they kind of took me as a Swede, and that also helped. That was a huge help for me to be among that strong, strong, fun Swedish group of top players.
Yeah, yeah. So you practiced a lot in Sweden as well, or?
Yeah, I practiced. Yeah, some. I never like lived in Sweden, but I practiced a lot in Båstad and Stockholm, and then competed. Numerous times in different cities, yeah, Nesby Park, Linköping, Lidköping, Eskilstuna. Yeah, you can name. I could name many cities and played Swedish. I played Swedish league. Spent a lot of time. Had a great time in Sweden, and then obviously my last official match in Stockholm Open happened to be also in Sweden. So as I said, I'm of course. Yeah, I'm a Finn, but as a tennis player, I feel kind of always felt like I have a lot of, as I said, a lot of Swedish Swedish tennis impact in me.
Yeah, I see. But did you have a coach going with you early on, or did you travel yourself in the beginning?
Yeah, no, I had a coach first, Finnish coaches, and later I had two Swedish coaches as a pro, but I had a Finnish coach traveling, sometimes full time, sometimes part time, and I think when I started after high school, when I started that like the first time, as like I kind of put everything to tennis for the first time, and I was quite old for doing that if compare nowadays, especially or that time. Many other players, but I think now it's easy to be smart afterwards when everything went quite well that year. But I think why it went that well, I won, I don't know, four or five challengers, then qualified in Stockholm Open, made final, started the year around 320, I can't remember exactly, and finished around 60. So had a huge success year, and I think I was mentally, why it went that well, I think I had a lot of energy because for the first time I didn't do anything else than focus to tennis, like everything to tennis. That was my goal, to have like this full year and then see how it goes. And then I was mentally and physically and also game wise I was ready to do that. So I think I had a lot of puzzles ready to break through to the top.
That's cool. And during your career, you won two ATP titles in singles.
Yes. And lost many finals.
Yeah, exactly. we're coming to that. But do you rank those titles as your biggest success during your career?
No, obviously. Well, I had lost two finals before winning the first one. So that was a huge, for sure, it's one of the one of these moments I will remember, one of the main moments in my career. But I don't think it's. I would say that three quarterfinals in Grand Slams, three different, are better achievements than those two wins.
Okay.
So I kind of like they were still not like Masters event or Grand Slams or anything like that. So yeah, big tour, of course, and tour events, yeah, but I think to make three times quarterfinal is, I think it takes more than win one or two tournaments.
And as you said, you reached 11 other finals in singles. Was it difficult to play finals for you, or what do you?
No, to be honest, I like if you look at statistics, you would think that I got really tight or something in the finals, but it wasn't the case. I mean, to be honest, I have got nervous like everybody or tight in some matches, but it never. I mean, there's maybe one final where I can say that I don't know, played too passive or got too tight or something, but there's more like quarterfinals, and I don't know how many. I have tens and tens of semifinals and even more quarterfinals where I felt that I'm kind of playing the best tennis during that week. There was no maybe Federer or Nadal in the draw, and I was playing really well, and then played a bad match in the semifinal many times, and those were maybe the matches that I felt that this was maybe the week to win for me. But those finals were actually, most of them were like I was just the second best player of that week, and that's quite simple as that. I lost a couple of times against Federer and Nalbandia, and these were they were just better. I another thing that I feel that it took a lot of effort and energy for me to make the finals. With my game style, I had to, like, usually I won some three setters and I had to grind a lot. And then I never felt really tired in the finals, but you know, I was maybe missing 3 or 4% of the maximum, like physically of my maximum, and then that's usually the match that I should play my best tennis of that week. When you meet, for example, Federer or Nalbandian in the final, that you don't, if you miss with my game, if I miss few percents, if I'm not as fast as I was in the beginning of the week or something, that's then you lose, and that's what happened.
Did you and your team talk about this during your career, that
if you could change
something in your style to take the next step like that?
Of course I tried, and I'm not talking about losing the finals. I think I had a, like, on the lower level when I came up from challengers, I think those statistics are other way around. I almost won every final, and that like kind of shows that
okay,
I didn't have to use so much energy to make finals in challenger, and then I had also more margin to play okay match in the final and still win. But on the tour level, I think my game wasn't just enough to, you know, win those big matches in the end with not exactly 100% game. But of course, I tried to make, like, my game and game style as good as possible, and to be able to beat those top five guys more often, top 10 guys while meeting those later stages. But yeah, of course, that's why the ranking is pretty fair. I think that also shows that I never made it to top five or top 10, and that's like one of the reasons that my maximum game wasn't that good, that I should belong there. I mean, of course, with one or two more wins, I could be number 10 or 9 in the world. But, you know, in the long run, if you look at my career, I have a lot of wins. I have over 400 wins on the tour level, which is a lot. If you look at the names who has that amount of wins, they are much bigger names with a better career what I had. But that's what I said earlier, that I won a lot of matches, but I wasn't good enough to go until the end.
Yeah, but you, of course, you had an amazing career. But in your game, what do you think was maybe the thing you missed to reach top five, for example, except what you explain now with. Yeah.
I think I didn't have enough big weapons. I at the same time, I really didn't have anything that bad. But like when I was 13, I have to say that those 12 guys in front of me, or 11, at least whatever, 10, 11 guys, they had better serve, especially better second serve. I mean, when I was playing my best, I think my first serve was enough to at least get advantage to able to hit the first ground stroke pretty aggressive. But in the end, I think I was lacking big weapons comparing those guys in front of me. When I was young, when I was younger, I had a really good backhand, really aggressive. But then, in the end, it wasn't. I was lucky to play long career almost without injuries. But I, those two little injuries that happened, they were both in my right wrist, my backhand wrist, and I felt that after those injuries, my backhand was never the same that it was. And it wasn't bad, wasn't a bad shot, but wasn't it was my biggest weapon, as I said, when I was younger. So I felt that besides the backhand, it's I think my biggest weapons were the like a mental and physical strength. So I was lacking some like big shots.
Okay. A question I usually ask many of the people I talk with in this podcast is if it's more important to have big weapons or to have a big toolbox and able to play a lot of different shots. What do you think is most important if you want to go far in your career?
Well, I think both are important, but I think when you can't have, I mean, you would need a big some big weapons, and you shouldn't have a big weakness. I think the competition is so tough that the players are able to attack if you have some weak parts in the game. If there is a clear weakness, then you really need a big weapon. For example, a huge serve or something that you can really like compensate a little bit. But I think it's tough to say which is more important. Like, of course. Like now when talking about my career, and I mentioned those 400 wins on the tour, I mean, if you would like to win something bigger, then yes, give me some bigger weapons. But if you don't want to lose first round, then get my game.
I see. And Jarkko, you also played a lot of doubles, often combined the singles with doubles. Can you elaborate a little bit about the advantages and maybe disadvantages with playing both singles and doubles?
Well, I first of all, I'm personally more as a team player, so I really love the game of doubles, to be able to share the moments with somebody and have to track work together for certain goals or wins. So I think it's fun. And then I always felt that every time, of course, I prioritize singles. So it's kind of, it's more relaxed. But of course, if I decide to compete in doubles, I always gave, try to win and gave 100%. And I felt that it helps my singles when I play doubles, especially when I was younger. I played a lot of doubles because I had a lot of physical, more physical energy and so on. I wanted to get a lot of matches also, and I think there's some parts that you can improve easier in playing doubles than in practice. Like I played for example serve and volley. With both serves in especially in hard courts in doubles, and it's something that it's and some return volley practice. It's still an official match with counts and which I always cared. So I think it was great. It really improved my singles game. But then in the end, I started to play less and less because it can be a risky sometimes when there's some, for example, rainy days or long matches, and you end up being on the court the whole day, and you still want to play, go far in singles. And then sometimes I didn't take that chance and decided to play only singles.
Okay. But you do think it's positive for your single game to play doubles as well?
For sure. But you have to be when and where, you should really. Yeah. I think it's impossible to play that all the time and be able to I think there's some guys who are on the top in both, but not too many. I think it's really hard. But here and there, for sure, it helps. But you have to make you have to plan the tournament calendar really smartly, and then at the same time think about where is good to play doubles and where you maybe shouldn't play doubles. like yeah. for example Wimbledon best of five in rainy London, it's that can be risky.
Yeah, I see. Even if you play doubles as well and are a successful single player as you were, I think tennis is a lot about handling the adversity and most of the weeks you end up having a loss that as your last match. How did you handle adversity? I'm thinking more mentally. Was it easy for you to just move on, or how did you handle that?
Well, I think I was kind of guy who could be very, very down for a very short moment. So I was like, if I played bad, then disappointed for a while, but then I always moved forward quite fast. But okay. Yeah, I could be down, but not for very long time. I was that kind of guy. And then later, I think I started to like really know what are the right things for me to do in the matches, and I kind of had a like mental setup that I take, I don't know, 2-3 maximum 4 main goals for the match, what I want to do, what are those right things for me to do during the match, and I really try to follow those from the beginning to the end, and then afterwards I see what the outcome is, because the result is just it's just the outcome of the effort you put into it. So maybe when I was younger, it was more black and white, like win is always good, lose is always bad. And then later I realized that it's maybe not like that. I mean, I won a lot of matches with playing like really the way I didn't want to play or I shouldn't play. And if you do that for many times, it doesn't improve your game in the long run. And then I realized that okay, I won, but I really didn't do those right things at all. The win is good because I go forward and I have a chance to play better the following day. But that's the only positive part. Otherwise, I should play a different way. And I realized that. And then I started to also, it helped in some losses where I did those right things from the start to finish. And okay, happened to lose 7-5 in the third, for example. Yeah, of course, painful. You don't like to lose, but okay, that day the other guy was just better, and okay, I did those things, and if I continue to do this, for sure I win those matches in the future, or my game at least improves.
And what could that be that you had as your goals going into a match, like 3-4?
Depending what kind of stage your game is or shape. There's four parts: tactical, technical, mental, and physical part. Those four parts. So those goals came from those four, four areas. And sometimes maybe two tactical things and one technical, or it depending. Like let's say when there was, I don't know if there was some kind of losing streak or confidence was quite low on the court. Then maybe the main focus was only to, you know, one tactical thing and the one mental thing, just to stay positive from the start to the end, because I was pretty demanding with myself, which helped me to go forward and improve my game. But then, of course, if you don't have confidence and you start to get really hard on yourself on the court, it doesn't really help. So then just like, okay, whatever happens, just like, you know, stay focused and stay positive, and then you look afterwards how you did that. And yeah, very like that's the very simple example, but anyways, those goals are quite simple. You can't like have 10 different goals going to the match.
But did you have it's tactical goals depending on your opponent?
I do, of course, like goals, tactical goals, what like and like I had like strong, tried to have strong like playing identity, and then depending who is my opponent, I can adjust the tactic for that opponent. And especially when I was playing well, or those my best seasons, years, I was pretty good changing tactics during the game as well, because as I said, I maybe didn't have a best technique or biggest weapons, but I I could use the court quite well and smart when I was playing well.
Okay. But just because I'm curious, for example, when you played Federer, for example, what could your tactic be against Roger?
you asked the guy who I lost against 15 times. So that's like the toughest example when.
Okay, well, but how else?
That's fine. I'm just laughing now. Of course, I always had great tactic, but especially against him, I was never able to execute that well, or it never worked out. But I'm using my one of the plans was to change pace to his backhand. I was lefty, so I use highest toe, especially on slower courts, using high top spin to his backhand, and then try to open the court with some short cross courts, and then I could flatten out my forehand down the line. That was one of my favorite shots. Yeah. And later stages, I think I made most points with that shot. So I was kind of like try to do those shots higher shape, higher top spin shots, long ones to the corner, and then get him like back from the baseline, or get shorter, slower ball from his backhand, and then I could change down the line, or open the court more, so he can't like always wait that high top spin. But this is just the one thing I tried.
okay. Yeah, I see. I will change subject a little bit. I mean, what do you think that you and your career have meant for Finnish tennis and for the younger generations coming up now?
When I was playing, the media followed my career and game quite a lot, so I guess there's at least a few kids who have also, some of them have said to me, now they are older, but they started to play because their parents and the kids were they were really young, they were watching tennis, my matches in the living room, and that obviously feels great that somebody has started playing because of me, and those examples are great. And I think more people started to play and follow tennis, and the media started to write about tennis, and it's still like since Stockholm Open 2001, where I make the first final, I think that from that week on, media has followed tennis quite well, even though sometimes we haven't done that well. Now we are doing better again, but you talk about top level tennis, I think the more people started to play and media started to follow more of the game, because it's still not among the most, or the biggest, like it's not the biggest sport, but it's getting bigger all the time.
Yeah, and how do you think it looks for Finnish tennis at the moment? What's the status, so to say?
Yeah, I think it's stronger now than a few years ago. We have obviously two players in top 100, one singles and one doubles player. Emil Ruusuvuori almost, I don't know, around 40 now, maybe 50, but almost around top 40 already. And I think the way he is and the way he works gives confidence that he will win even more in the future and get even higher, much higher ranking. And Harri Heljavaara just, I think today, went to top 15 in doubles for the first time. So it's like, of course, it's like we are small countries and tennis is not the biggest sport, so we don't have too many professionals. But comparing how few professionals we have, I think we have like done quite well. The problem is that we would need more those girls, boys, women, men who want to try. prior pro career. Many people play, but not so many people compete, especially on the international level. But there's more, answering your question a little bit more, there's more, like we are doing quite well in Davis Cup now. We are one win away from the final stage, which would be the first time in the Finnish tennis history that would happen. So that's a good thing. We have pretty good strong team, and also some good talents in boys and girls side. Our top woman Kulikova is top 200, so
yeah,
there's some young ones who are very talented, and there's some more good things, more positive things happening around Finnish tennis than let's say a few years ago.
I think we all are the Nordic countries like Sweden, Norway, Denmark and Finland maybe have the same challenge with getting more players to compete internationally.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, what do you think is the biggest keys to get more players on that international level?
Well, it's obviously good examples are encouraging others to try that. But otherwise, it's also in these kind of countries, maybe the those who are a little bit doubting if they should really go and try full or not, there's so many other good options that are winning most of the time, and I think it's also less and less youngsters are coming to tennis with a larger sport background. Many of them, they have played a lot of tennis, but they haven't done anything else. That's for sure one thing because at least I know many cases in Finland that when these kids, they get older and they start to, it gets more physical and there's more hours and playing during the week, comes the injuries. And of course, when some injuries happen, then of course the player starts to doubt if this is actually something that I want to put everything into it or go a safer way. Those are for sure some challenges what we face, but I think top level or not top level but professional tournaments, more junior tournaments and good tournaments we have, that obviously helps, that you don't have to we can help the best ones with the wild cards and it also helps to build up a tennis culture, those events when people actually see, and you have a different case in Sweden when you have a long history with tournaments and bigger events as well, but it's not the same, say, like an easy no. task to easy task to solve. I think if it would be, I think there would be more professionals from Nordic countries, but
how are you involved in tennis today, Jarkko?
Well, everything what I do work-wise is connected to tennis, so I'm lucky to have this young kids passion as a job still the first almost 20 years or 15 years as a professional player, and now I'm working for the federation, not full time, but many months a year. I'm a Davis Cup captain, and then I do different things. I'm coaching some juniors. I'm not they full time coach, but they are. There's a federation has this base where some of the top juniors practice, and I'm there to help a few times a week. I'll try to help, and then I do other kids some other things with kids, some street tennis, go to school sometimes, and then I commentate for about 2 months a year, all biggest events, for Grand Slams. I commentate for Finnish Eurosport.
Okay,
so that's also also that helps me to kind of like get to know the upcoming young players when I have to. Obviously I follow tennis anyways, but
a little bit
because of commentating, I try to follow a little bit more, especially when the Grand Slams are coming up. I really try to get to know who is doing well and how are these ones playing with those players that I haven't seen or I don't know that well, and helps me to stay like aware where the game where the top game is at the moment, because I'm not seeing, otherwise I'm not traveling much, so I'm not, otherwise I wouldn't be seeing that.
Yeah, I see. Sounds fun though. When you're working for the federation, there's a discussion in Sweden what kind of role a federation should have in a player's development. What do you think is the federation's part in a player's pathway towards the international tour?
Well, I think there, at least what we have in Finland, try to have a stronger clubs help with the coaching education, help to have a more motivated, passionate, professional coaches on a different levels.
Mm.
And then to have good systems in the clubs, that whatever age or level you are, that you could you would be able to improve your game and get help tennis wise in the clubs, and then have some kind of pathway when you are junior, when you are a top junior and playing also international tournaments. At least now here in Finland, the federation is helping until the junior states, and when the junior turns adult, then it's more individual support. So kind of that the system is supporting almost as long as you turn pro. So you kind of have, of course, you always have other options as well, but at least you have a path to follow and get the best environment as possible in the country. So
okay.
So
okay.
You'd have to like find everything for yourself and because it's always kind of a lottery when there's nothing to like, no support or nothing to follow.
Yeah, exactly. Jarkko, I have a few questions I ask to all my guests here that I will ask you as well. But before that, I just shortly want to ask you about one kind of famous match you played in Miami 2014 against Banatomic.
The fast one.
It was super fast match. I think it was 28 minutes and 20 seconds, I read somewhere.
Yeah, and still the fastest one, I think. Yeah.
And I think it will keep being. how was that match from your perspective?
Well, Tomic was a great player at that time, but he wasn't, I don't know, he wasn't really physically there. I think he I don't know what did he have, but he was not able to move well, so I was kind of controlling every single rally, and he made a lot of mistakes, played really bad. He made one game with three aces and one good serve, so it wasn't love and love, but he wasn't really I mean, it seemed that he had some kind of physical problem, but at least the way he moved was really not a challenge on that day. I don't know why. Yeah.
Okay.
What exactly, but that was time when he was, I think, coming back, or he had some injuries, or coming back from the injuries, and I think he had some kind of physical limitations, or he wasn't obviously was far from his best.
Okay. But how did you handle that, like, mentally during the match? Because obviously you saw what was going on. But did you try to stay like focused anyway, or did you yeah, did you?
Yeah, of course, that's, sometimes it's easier said than done, but I think I was like, I could manage that quite well, because it's, as I said, most of the points ended up quite similar way, and I felt that this is today is pretty, at least, of course, I all the time I waited that he kind of wakes up.
Yeah,
and there's a chance that he starts to play better. So I kept focus pretty well all the time. But game wise, it's as the time tells, it was very easy. So yeah, it wasn't a problem to maintain the focus.
All right. A few last questions, Jarkko. First one: what is the biggest waste of time for you, according to tennis, or related to tennis?
Biggest
waste of time.
I don't know. Like, if I, I don't know what is. I don't think anything. Of course, when you're waiting for the flight at the airport, you feel it's like wasting time. But it's obviously it's part of the package. But I don't feel there's any waste if I understand the question correctly. I
think you
like
do.
Yeah, I don't know if you. I mean, I was since the start to the finish, I was always lucky to be able to have my own choices, and I always wanted to take, as long as I played, I did choices to try to become as good tennis players I could, and then I could have made different choice every day if I would have won it. But so I don't think there was anything waste.
Okay.
Because that was a free choice of mine.
Yeah, good. What have you changed your mind about the last couple of years?
Sorry?
What have you changed your mind about the last couple of years? Have you changed your mind about anything?
What I've changed, connected to tennis or
yeah I'm thinking connected to tennis first of all. It's a bit trickier questions here.
That's very fine. I have to think, is there something that I have changed my I don't know. It doesn't come anything to my boring answer, but it doesn't come anything to my mind which I actually have changed dramatically. Some strong opinions, if they have really changed about something that is connected to tennis. Nothing comes to my mind at the moment.
All right. How do you think you have improved as a coach since you started coaching, or your style as a coach?
Well, experience always helps. I try to, as a player, try to be better every day, try to improve all the time, and of course experience helps. I try to learn from my mistakes and also those moments that has been successful. So try to learn from the past and try to, knowing like my style of coaching better, which way works the best for me and for different players. It's always a learning experience, and I think you're never as a player, never like ready or never perfect. That obviously everything was new when I started some of these coaching things. So yeah, now I'm more a little bit more experienced, and that always helps.
How would you describe yourself as a coach today, or how do you wanna be seen?
Well, fair. Demanding enough, professional.
Yeah.
Maybe those are something that comes to my mind first. And I, I'm usually those coaching jobs that they have. I'm kind of in most of them. I'm kind of there as an extra help. I don't have a individual player that I'm responsible of because I at the moment I'm not willing to travel that many weeks. And I think if you're on the working as a coach on the top level, then of course even if it's an older junior or adult, you obviously need to travel a lot. And I don't think it's right to have a responsible of some player if you are not there there all the, I mean, most of the time. And so I'm kind of there as part of the federation's work. I'm there like helping the other coaching team and those juniors when those days and hours when I'm there. But the Davis Cup is the only area where I'm totally like in charge of.
Yeah. Okay. The way you described how you want to be seen as a coach, was that how the coaches you had were towards you in some way, would you say?
Well, yeah, I had a lot of that also helps now when I do some coaching, that I had so many long career and very different kind of coaches and a lot of I for sure I got a lot of things from every single of them, and they were all fair towards me, which I always, as I said, I would like to try to be as well and professional good coaches. Lucky to have worked with many of them, and I also try to like copy some of the things that I remember that are really good, and if there's some parts that I don't know, like didn't like that much, or maybe that's a wrong way of saying that I find that it wasn't necessary or helpful, then I obviously try to avoid those things in my own coaching. And it's the same thing, try to remember all the like good and less good things from whole trip with different kind of coaches.
Yeah. Two questions left. A movie or book you have been inspired by? Do you read a lot, Jack?
I read a lot, so that's why to pick one is very difficult. Well, movie, I take first movie because, not movie, the series, the Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan, a few years
The Last Dance.
Yes, that's obviously a documentary series, but that was, because I was younger, I didn't have one like a tennis idol. I had one sport idol, and that was Michael Jordan. And now, when I watch that series, it kind of like I woke up again to like be that little boy and little fan. That was inspiring documentary series, but.
Yeah, but did your picture of Michael change anything during when you watched it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yes, and there was some parts that I was not aware about that what kind of person he is, and also as an athlete, so it was very interesting. And when I followed his career, I was also like quite young that time, so I was focusing more the results and the nice games, matches that he, or unbelievable things that he did on the court or the field. So this gave like a deeper picture about him as an athlete and as a person. And I like many tennis players and also try to imitate some strokes, but never somehow, even though I like. This idol came outside tennis and was Michael Jordan. So yeah, that was very inspiring documentary series.
That's pretty cool. And do you have a book as well to share?
Book. Pick one. Oh, there's a lot of. It's different to have a good book and inspiring. I read a lot of so different kind of books, but I have to come up with something.
It sounds like you're looking in your library now.
I don't have that big many books, but I should think. So it must be some biography which has been more like most inspiring. I just started to come up with some that I haven't read so many lately. Nelson Mandela's book was something. That's like actually a long time ago that I read it, but I'll read a lot of biographies as well, and that was obviously.
Yeah, yeah,
something like extraordinary.
That's a good choice. That's a good choice.
Yeah.
Lastly, then, Jakob, what do you think you do in 10 years' time from now?
Well, hopefully, I still have a good health, family is healthy and enjoying the family life and tennis as now. Hopefully I can still work in tennis. It's still the same passion as it started as a little kid. And I think now when I work, it doesn't feel like that kind of like a work. I hardly never watch the clock, that great that the day is ending soon, it ends when it ends, but it's so much fun. Yeah. I think I'm very lucky to be able to have this kind of passion for the work. So I have absolutely no complaints now. I really hope that I can do something similar in the future as well.
That's cool. Do you think you will go on the tour more again anytime?
Maybe that would be fun. I'm sure that would be something that I would be very motivated for, and I think I would enjoy that. I really enjoy my weekly life in Finland at the moment, and obviously you can't do things that I do now at home and how I work in Finland and then travel a lot at the same time. And at the moment I have chosen to do this and stay more in Finland, which I love, stay at home a lot and work from here. But I have got some requests to coach some players, and that would mean more traveling, and so far I haven't said yes to those. I'm happy that I have got some questions and requests, but I'm not saying that I will never do it. So we'll see how I feel in the future in some years.
Yeah, I see. Jakob, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, same, likewise.
Thank you so much for taking your time, and good luck in the future.
Thanks, you too.
But we're not over really yet, because if you are a Patreon supporter to this podcast, you have been able to send in questions for my guests. And I have a few questions or two questions for Jarkko Nieminen. But due to technical error, we were not able to record this during our chat. But Jarkko have answered those questions through a text which I will read for you listeners. So it's a little special edition this time, and in the future we will of course bring up the questions during the real podcast recording. If you want to become a Patreon supporter, you can become that through the link that I will attach to this episode. The first question I got for Jarkko from one of my supporters was, which tournament would you like to play again if you could only pick one? And Jarkko answered, which was not very surprising, Stockholm Open.
And the other question was, which of all the matches that you have played are you most proud of, and which one was the most exciting one to play? And Jarkko's answer was, I was really excited about my first Grand Slam main draw match 2002 against Pete Sampras, who I had watched a lot when I was younger. And beating Del Potro in Monte Carlo for the first time on the surface that I wasn't so strong on during my older days, I surprised myself how well I could still play on the clay. Thanks so much, Jarkko, for answering these questions a little bit after our conversation. That was Jarkko Nieminen, everybody. And I believe that we all can agree that there's many roads to the top of the world. There's not only one correct way to do everything, and I think Jarkko is the perfect example of the saying that there's many roads leading to Rome in some way. So yeah, we need to have an open mindset as coaches and see what suits this player, this individual player, the best. Super nice talking to Jarkko, and I'm super happy that he and all the other guests take their time to share all the knowledge to us, so we all can grow together in, yeah, both in Sweden and in Scandinavia overall. And I'm super happy that this podcast is spreading all even outside of Sweden. As you all know, we have had guests from different countries, Norway, Denmark, outside of Scandinavia, and now Jarkko joins in here as well, which I'm super happy for. Take care, everybody, and talk to you very soon again.